big color, bigger savings. Sherwin-Williams Super Sale is here. Get 40% off paints and stains June 5th through the 11th with prices starting at $38.89. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome along to the D Word podcast, where we talk dementia. My guest on this edition is Mercedes Fernandez, originally from California, now based in Belgium. She has a master's degree in kinesiology and works as a geriatric physiotherapist. Well, Mercedes, it's great to welcome you as my guest here on the D Word. Plenty to talk to you about, but before we get into that, I mean, just give us a little bit of background on your story and how you came to where you are at the moment.
Yes, thank you, Pete. It's such a pleasure to be here with you today. I'm very excited. I've been looking forward to meeting you for some time, so I'm excited. And a little bit of deep dive, a quick deep dive into me. I'm essentially a geriatric kinesiologist. I've created that term because I was in the study of human movement in the United States. We call it kinesiology. In Europe, I've come to learn that it is physiotherapy. That's the same term. And essentially, I had a very close bond with my grandfather. I grew up with him. I had affinity for being around older adults. And once I graduated from undergraduate studies in kinesiology, I realized that I came to notice pretty fast there was a very big gap in health and wellness and exercise that didn't target older adults and elderly and working with a population with disabilities and mostly an aging community. And so that's kind of where I grew into this. I came into creating geriatric kinesiology, physiotherapy for older adults, specifically focusing on that because there is a significant need. And I think post-COVID, I have seen at least a little bit more attention there, but I still find myself in a very, very niche market, and I'm really excited to lead the torch there.
Yeah, it's an interesting area. It's one of those areas that, you know, probably sad some way that the way we look at things as a community, because it's rather like, the, you know, the show being called the D word because people don't want to talk about dementia. And people have said to me also that the D word comes into things in terms of don't. And you think of people getting, increasing in age, and maybe people look and say, well, don't do all that movement and don't do this and don't do that. Whereas, you know, actually you're trying to open up that world, aren't you?
Exactly. Yes. I'm here to encourage the do and not the don't.
And, how do you overcome that? You know, it's almost a sort of stigma, really, isn't it? You know, we do tend to write people off when they reach a certain age and just say, well, no, they won't be able to do that, which is, you know, as you and I know, is far from the truth.
It really is a creative way for me to express what I love to do. And oftentimes, to your point, yes, it's a don't do this, you're going to get hurt, or maybe be careful, it's better that you just sit down and I'll go grab your food for you. And essentially, the way I get to see it is it's actually a fun way to get creative, to do it safely. So instead of saying don't, okay, how can we think about a safer way to do that? So let me help you. Let's put in some handrails. Perhaps it's a great way to practice your range of motion to say, okay, maybe that can is a little too high. I'll bring it. Someone can bring it down for you, but let's try to reach for it. So it has, I would say it's a way for us to start to integrate, and essentially like what you do here on your work is integrating how we can approach things in a more creative way, instead of taking that independence away. Because as we get older, that's a common thing that we hear often is, well, I'm losing my independence, I can't drive anymore, therefore I'm stuck at home, and therefore, you know, it can be a really fast downward slope. But I encourage, my mission is to encourage people to really think about the opposite.
Yeah, and it's kind of, you know, you're not introducing the don't, you're introducing the can do, really, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
And, you know, do you, I mean, you get it from people who look from a distance and say, well, maybe that person's of a certain age, they can't do that. But when you get to a person of a certain age, do you also get people saying to you, well, actually, I can't do that, when they actually can?
Yes. Yes, I would say that I do often get meet with some resistance based out of fear. And that's natural, right? I've never done this kind of exercise where I'm bending really low. Or an example is a squat, right? Someone can get a little nervous if they've never played with weights before. And so when you combine two new exercises with weights, you know, you do get some resistance. But what I've learned, I have a very compassionate, very empathetic approach to life in general. But we, again, it kind of goes back into that creative thing. Well, let's just try, you know, it doesn't hurt to try. And if we do it in a safe way, you break it down into progressive steps. And so going back to that, you know, a squat is essentially sitting down in a chair and pushing back up. It's a sit to stand. But it's kind of getting out of that fear blockage, which, you know, fear is there to protect us. And so that resistance is, yes, it's okay to feel weary, and let's try. One little step is better than no step at all.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, that's the key, really, isn't it? You know, one little step better than no steps. But I guess the other key is, you know, is doing it with a smile on your face as well.
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, I myself have moments where I'm like, oh, I really don't want to exercise, and you know, it's a drab day outside, but I have to run. And once you do it, it's the hardest part is just getting started. And this is kind of not parallel to exercise, but it's parallel to just humanity. When we go outside and we pass people on the street, you know, how often are we looking at each other? How often is that one person that looks back and smiles can brighten up a day, or the one person who just looks and just is, you know, might be having a bad day in their own world, and we take it, you know, it kind of attaches to us of like, oh, well, now I'm having a bad day. So to your point, doing things with a smile, having a little bit of this push for our own health, or, you know, positive push to the health, even though we don't want to do it, the after effect is very beneficial.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Big color, bigger savings. Sherwin-Williams Super Sale is here. Get 40% off paints and stains June 5th through the 11th with prices starting at $30.89. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
UK Health. Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
The 2024 UK Health Radio Awards are set for launch. All the details will be on the website at www.ukhealthradio.com, and there will be a Dementia Support Award for that person or organisation that's made a real difference in the field. I'm also delighted to announce that this year's award will be called the Wendy Mitchell Award in honour of our friend Wendy, who passed away earlier this year. So keep an eye on the website and do cast a vote. My guest on the podcast this week is Mercedes Fernandez. You kindly sent me some details on yourself, and I want to change the subject a little bit in terms of advocacy. And, you know, in your bio, you use this great phrase we looked at. It said, getting through healthcare in a murky medical system, which I think explains things pretty well when you're thrown into the role of caregiver. And I know you were very early on with your grandfather, weren't you? You know, tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. Originally, I am native to the United States, to California. I'm currently living in Belgium now. So I've learned the different variations of healthcare around the world. And essentially, that murky medical system is in summary of the United States medical system. If anyone's familiar with it, you know, even just through the news itself, it's very complicated. And most often when you're a caregiver, whether that's expected or unexpected for an older adult or a loved one or family member who gets sick, the healthcare system in the United States is privatized. And so I'm not sure how it is in England. In Belgium, it's set up differently. So I think it's communal through the government, but it's not privatized. So in America, because of that, you have all these different options. And depending on your income, you might have varying levels. Well, when you are in the Medicare system, which is the 65 and up governmental or federal, excuse me, Medicare medical system, that gets really convoluted if you have private as well as now this Medicare. And so when it gets murky is as a caregiver and you're not in health, you have all these different variations of, do you need long-term care? Well, there's home health care. And so, you know, I have experience. It's such a big conversation. I don't even know really where you want to start. But my point being is like anyone who might be listening who is going through the healthcare system itself, no matter where you are, it is a big change. It's a big, I don't want to call it a monster, but the United States healthcare definitely feels like a monster when you don't have any ground basis of understanding it, just because they make it complicated on purpose.
Yeah, I think, you know, here in the UK, no, we don't have a private system is the answer to that. We have the NHS, which was formed in 1948. So we've got a fair, you know, long experience of community medical care. But having said that, I don't think probably it's any less murky in a certain respect. In what you've described is it's a very difficult system to make your way through in terms of health. There are still private elements and there are public elements. And I guess one thing, you know, that must be in common is when you get thrust into being a caregiver, I mean, there's no manual. You don't get taught it at school. It's just something that you know, you just have to do your best.
Yes, you have to figure it out on the way. And I always tell this to people who are now caregiving or people who are just kind of getting started or haven't even really experienced caregiving. It's really important if you are in a caregiving situation to find a community of caregivers, because there are a lot of resources there. Google if you need some kind of support, because oftentimes what I found after my grandfather passed, after the fact I was a caregiver, there are a lot of state, city, county, country I would say federal resources. We just have to find them. They're not really, like you said, we don't get a manual to say, hey, here are all the resources you should. But unfortunately, depending on where you are in the United States, what your health insurance level is, you know, what are the access to those resources? Are they even telling you, you know, unfortunately, with certain low-income programs, there are available resources, but they're not being told to you. So you have to figure it out on your own. And so that's part of it, but also aside with the caregiving role is the emotional toll it takes too. And no one really talks about that. And so when you're a caregiver, you're stressed out and you just want to vent, and everyone around you is like, we don't understand your emotional experience. You know, I can't support you as you know, the way that we need to be supported, because they just don't understand. And like, okay, we've heard you venting, go talk to a therapist. But sometimes you just, it's really helpful to get support from another caregiver or a former caregiver who can understand and help you through it.
And do you also, I mean, you were, you know, in the role from age of 8, that some people actually don't consider themselves to be caregivers or, you know, carers is the term we use here in the UK, because they just think, yeah, I'm naturally looking after my loved one. I'm not a carer.
Yes, it is a big term. And to your point, I come from a cultural background, a Latin background, where we, you know, it just is implied in the culture. So we're not necessarily like, how do I put it? To your point, it's not really like, I'm going to be a caregiver. It's, I'm taking care of mom and dad, and mom's living with me now. And that's just how it is. And we allow it. We accept it. It's part of the culture, which is, to your point, I think why we are not so apt to looking for resources, because it's just part of the life cycle.
And I think, you know, now we've got, you know, what we call the sandwich generation as well, haven't we? Which are people that will have young families at one end and be looking after aging parents, loved ones at the other end. And that's a really difficult situation for people to find themselves in as well.
Yes, I see that often as well. And I have helped quite a bit of people in this sandwich generation. My parents are also a sandwich generation. I have one grandparent left out of four. I was fortunate enough to have all four grandparents as I was growing up. And it is an intricate challenge. You know, I'm in my mid-30s now, so I'm not really at the youth spectrum of the sandwich generation. But it is interesting to see how it has affected generations differently. I also come from two very large families on both sides, so my father's side and my mother's side. To see the way that in large families, who the care role ends up being given on or taken upon. So when you have a family of 12 children and you have two living parents still, and both of them are, you know, they're separated, but they're both equally of age and they're sick, you know, out of the 12, who is it that takes care of them? And it ends up landing usually on one or two. And it's an interesting phenomenon to have experienced, I guess, and to witness as the younger generation. So then essentially my mother and I cared for my grandfather, which was her father. And so it was just me and her out of her and 10 children, 10 siblings.
I guess it must be difficult amongst families, you know, no matter how large they are, in agreeing what you're going to do with that care, and particularly when it comes to some of the really thorny issues, whereas, you know, when are we going to actually move into perhaps some form of residential care instead of staying at a home? Must be really difficult for, you know, the whole family to agree that the same course of action.
Absolutely. It's a very big point of contention, I would say, at least from my experience. Again, I wasn't even in the immediate child group. I was the granddaughter. But really seeing the way that the family dynamics happen and finances and what happens after the passing and how do we all get along. There are, you know, I think it really just also brings up a lot of emotional experiences between the family and between the parents, and like really stark realities kind of come to the surface of, well, dad's actually kind of on his way out and I have all these emotions that I've never processed and I don't want to process. And then that translates into, well, I don't want him to live with me, or, you know, this sibling knew about that. So it's so convoluted. And I understand everyone has their personal issues. I don't even want to call them issues, but everyone has life, right? Ultimately, the way that I tried to see everything in this compassionate lens was, yes, things happened. We're human. He was human. You're human. I can't change the past, but what we can do is, how can we set Pop up? How can we set Grandfather up, your dad up, for the most optimal, kindest passing? You know, at the end, he's going and we're here. Is there anything that we can do to kind of, you know, do we heal it? Do we forgive? So that at the end, what I saw, and I don't know if I'm going on a tangent here, but for anyone listening, I think what broke my heart the most was, even after all the strife that he had endured with his children, he repented, he forgave, he did his processing. And he was so sad. He was torn at the end because, you know, most of his children never called him on Father's Day anymore. You know, most of his, no one came to visit. And as he was on his way out, you know, some came through, but I think it really hurt him. And I can see that, you know, and I think at the end, it just made me think, okay, we just have to kind of get through all of the BS to just at least bring some peace to the person who is now on the way out.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, very important. Thanks for sharing that with us. But then, you know, the other important thing must be that even though they're going to be difficult conversations, if we can cover a lot of those conversations while we still can, then when it does come to that time, a lot of my friends who I know living with dementia, first thing they do is make sure that they've got everything in order, so that when they continue along their journey, nothing towards the end becomes a shock.
Yeah, that's really powerful. And I have brief experience with, both my grandmothers had dementia, but I wasn't in firsthand care. So I didn't see the progression until it was already pretty advanced. And so it's interesting to hear your friends' perspectives of, well, they know that it's coming, it's going to progress and progress. So kind of clearing the slate there. I think that's a really beautiful approach.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, one that hopefully more people will take on. However difficult those kind of conversations are. I mean, talking of conversations, one of the other things as well is, you know, when you are a caregiver, sometimes it's very difficult to actually ask difficult questions of those people who may be taking care of your loved one. I'm thinking when you go into, you know, some form of residential care, things are maybe not quite the way you want. But I don't know, you know, I think you come from Belgian background, USA. Here in Britain, we're very reserved. We'd sit back and we'd watch something, but probably not come forward and say anything about it. And I guess there, you know, you have to have some confidence, don't you, as a caregiver, to actually note what's going wrong and then also bring that subject up.
Absolutely. I think that the thing that I found when I was younger, it took some time, but, you know, as I've kind of grown in my career, learning the value and the impact of vulnerability and advocacy. For me, I was very reserved, quiet, young adult, that when I was taking care of my grandfather, I had all these questions for the doctors. I had fears, I had concerns, but I also didn't have the courage to speak up to them, to say, hey, you know, I disagree with this test result or this prescription, until it got to the point where, you know, like a fireside came out. It got to the point where there's this almost, I think they call it like hitting your glass ceiling, essentially, like, again and again, repeated things. The medications were switched. My grandfather was going in and out of the hospital like every week because the doctor was, I don't know if it's malpractice or she was too busy, but it felt like it was disregarded. So she'd say, okay, this medication didn't work. Okay, like, let's try this one. And now let's try this one. So it was almost like a test. And because of that, that really was a detriment. And the point being is, now that I've learned, I'm here to advocate for other carers to not be afraid to ask questions. It might feel uncomfortable. It might feel very vulnerable to ask, you know, the person you're caring for, you know, did anything happen? Are you being abused? Is someone being taken advantage of in this situation, especially in a residential care home? You know, you're not there 24/7 to see. Unfortunately, we do have a lot of crime and a lot of fraud in this space of elder abuse, because sometimes, you know, someone might become nonverbal and then they can't speak up. So where is the line between, you know, do we sit back and just say, well, this is the norm, I can't do anything about it? Or do we be a little bit more courageous and be bold and ask questions like, hey, you know, I noticed that mom is being a little bit different. She's more skittish when this person comes in, or her money is suddenly disappearing, we need to investigate. So most, if it's a care home in the United States, they have a ombudsman that is someone who will, you know, make sure that things are not being, you know, mishandled. So just doing your research, finding that person, and having tough conversations to, again, the primary reason here is to take care and advocate for the loved one who may not be able to fully advocate for themselves anymore.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Got some great guests lined up for the podcast, but we've always got room for more. So if you've got a story to tell or you're working on a new project, do get in touch with us at tdwradio@gmail.com. Back to my chat now with Mercedes Fernandez. And I guess the other thing is the way we portray the role of caregivers, because caregivers, you know, they're not salaried, they're not paid, they do what they do. And sometimes I feel that community will look at people in positions of responsibility, doctors, medical professionals. My feeling is that caregivers should be on a level. Everybody should be on a level and working as a team. Whereas sometimes that doesn't really happen because, as you know, you've just said, you know, a doctor will say, well, change the medication then and do this and do that. Instead of the conversation should surely be, what do we do now?
Absolutely. I feel very passionately about what you just said as well. As unfortunately, I think that it's almost like nursing. Nurses do so much of the work, but yet they are overlooked by the doctor. When the doctor comes in, I understand they went to more school. I'm not saying who is better or not. But in the caregiving role as well, it's like, well, you're just a caregiver. So therefore, there's no, you know, you don't have high high quote unquote value, but it's like they're doing all the work, you know, like carers are doing all the work. They know actually the person the best. And so finding that collaboration would be a perfect, an ideal world. And I hope that we, you know, we can bring that together. Because I think it's like office politics sometimes, like, okay, well, she's stepping on my toes. I had an experience with the same doctor who she was switching medication. And I said, can we look into what's happening? And so she pulls her phone out and she Googles. And this was like almost 10 years ago. So at the time, you know, we do it now, no problem. But at the time I was just appalled that I'm going to a doctor who I'm supposed, you know, we trust, right? There's this big aura around the doctors, and older generations are very, like my grandfather, they believe what the doctor says goes and they will never cross it. And my generation is a little bit more, well, I question things. So I'm like, okay, I hear you and I would like to know why. So that there was a scuffle there in the sense of like, well, I didn't trust that her expertise was a value because she was Googling something I could Google. So, you know, I think finding that collaboration, and then it went kind of downhill from there. So, yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. And I think it's all about communication as well. In the fact that, you know, we all talk the same language because I had a good friend, Wendy Mitchell, who sadly passed away a couple of months ago. And when Wendy used to go into a meeting with a medical professional, and they used to go into what she used to call jargon, so you see complicated medical speech, Wendy used to get a jar out of her bag and rattle it and say, I want you to make a contribution and now tell me in English so I can understand. She called it a jargon jar. And I think that's a really effective thing because sometimes, you know, you and I share different backgrounds. We're in different countries, okay? But, you know, we've had 25 minutes of a conversation where we've agreed in a lot of what each has said just because we have communicated. And it would be really nice to be able to do that all the way with, you know, medical professionals, social workers, et cetera.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the two takeaways so far right now is that I'm hearing is vulnerability and communication. And those two go hand in hand for all aspects of life, in my opinion.
But I think, you know, here's the big question then, Mercedes. You know, we've agreed on that. The policymakers are the people that, you know, govern a lot of this stuff and how it goes on. How do we, you know, I'm not expecting the perfect answer to this because I don't know, and I'm sure none of the listeners know, but how do we actually get that point across to those people who make the policies and hold the purse strings?
Yes, it's so timely that you bring it up because I'm feeling I have been so passionate on this topic for a while that I've been considering, like, how can I get into policy? You know, I've always wanted to make an impact in the world, you know, with elderly healthcare and like really pushing for better social economic health. And I have the same questions, you know, and I think now that I live on the other, you know, totally different continent and a different country, seeing the disparities, seeing how things work differently and like, wow, everything is great in Belgium, like way different than the United States. And what is the legislation, right? How do we impact? I think advocating at a local level is the first start. I would love to get more involved in policy so that I can understand and make change in, you know, in the higher levels as you go up. But I think at least what comes to the top of mind is definitely starting at your local level and even your community. So going back to what I said before was, you know, if caregivers talk to caregivers in the same city, in the same little town, and then the city, and then the county, right? They're going to have all these frustrations. Well, we don't have access to a bus that has a wheelchair access. We need that. We don't have access. You know, accessibility has really gotten a lot of great policy efforts over the years, and it's been really great. Policy does take time. I think the more that we speak up, the more that we push, get into the city councils, pushing those bills. And I think that's the way that goes up. If anyone has insight on that, I'd be very open to hearing it, because I myself, again, I really want to get into it. But I do believe in change through policy. Unfortunately, you know, a whole nother conversation of like corporate policies and such, and pharma and biotech. But at the, you know, at the level for caregivers, the level of elder healthcare, at the level of social economic well-being, I think that all really can start in your neighborhood, in your city, in your country, and then it disperses that way.
Yeah, I think that's a great message to start from the bottom, and that, you know, it's something everybody can be involved in. And, you know, let's not just sit there and let it happen. Let's actually get involved. It's been a pleasure, Mercedes. I've got to go totally off shoot here, off topic, and just ask you one more question. Are you still playing the piano?
Oh, I wish. No, but you know, I don't think that it ever really left me. I am still very musical, but I don't have a piano here, but I do have a piano at my parents' house, and anytime I'm there, I just look at the keys and I can hear the music. I can't read the notes anymore. That is true. I look at a sheet of paper and I'm like, I have no idea what this musical note is, but if I hear it, I can know the keys and play it. So yeah,
well,
I don't.
I think you need to get back to it. But thank you. It's been fascinating. Thanks so much for being my guest on The D Word. And hopefully we can keep in touch. And, you know, when you do get involved in policy, then, you know, don't forget us. Let us know.
Absolutely. And for the people, by the people, with the people, I will absolutely keep everyone in mind. And it has been such a pleasure. Such a pleasure, Pete.
Thanks to Mercedes for a fascinating chat and sharing memories of her grandfather. You can find out more about her work at the website movemet.info. Well, that's all we have time for on this edition. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join me again soon for some more Dementia Chat right here on the D Word Podcast.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.